So your agency is offering care plans to clients, which has greatly helped you in building a regular income stream. How about stretching the canvas and going to the next level with WordPress Retainers? How does WordPress Retainers offer more value to your clients, their businesses, and to you? More importantly, how you can pivot your offerings to a retainer model? Mario Peshev is here sharing about WordPress Retainers and much more. So let's get started and welcome Mario on the show. Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Hi, Mario. How are you?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. So before we get on with the WordPress retainers that will make me more money, make you more money, probably you already make more money, but listeners who want to jump from care plans to a more robust model of WordPress retainers, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Absolutely. So I'm currently the CEO of Devrix. It's a distributed WordPress agency founded about a decade ago. We are a team of about 45 people or so, with 7 or 8 WordPress core contributors on the team. We've been profiling in building long-term solutions for small and medium enterprises, for high-scale publishers, and also funded startups. And we are trying to dabble into more complex use cases and scenarios for successful online businesses that really depend on their kind of day-to-day online presence. We are one of the first agencies that actually started with WordPress as a software as a service. And ever since, we have built 7 or 8 high-scale SaaS applications on top of WordPress, which is something we're super proud of. We've also utilized WordPress multi-site in numerous scenarios. And in general, it's pretty much an interesting experience. We're kind of trying to combine our engineering enterprise-grade expertise for the WordPress context, simply because most of the applications out there built on top of WordPress are, you know, 5-page business websites and blogs and just, you know, kind of portfolio websites. And we're trying to just focus on the higher tier portals, which generate a lot of traffic, right? Some of our customers, they do generate hundreds of millions of pages a month, and we are spending quite a lot of time on performance optimization and scaling. And as a result, retainers are currently forming about 95% of our business at all. Mm-hmm. Our very first retainer, which started about 5 years ago, is still with us, and we are super happy with that. And kind of our motto and our mission is working with great clients and growing with them and essentially working with them for years, just improving their digital presence in different ways.
Cool. So it's all WordPress for you, but at a different level.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's just a different game than most people out there.
Okay, let's talk about the basic concept of WordPress retainers. Now, I believe WordPress retainers is more than just offering care plans, which usually is, you know, maintaining website and updating a website. So for an agency owner who is offering care plans, how would you stretch the canvas and explain the concept of WordPress retainers to that type of an audience who is already doing the care plans?
Well, retainers can be shaped in different manners. And yeah, care plans are a fraction of what a retainer contains by itself.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to give a very specific piece of advice. I'm more about talking about the purpose of retainers in the first place. Now, the idea, like, we have coined WordPress retainers about 5 years ago, and this has been our vision and our long, that's essentially what really helped us grow over the years. But when we came up with the idea of WordPress retainers, and I was looking about looking for the right way to just compose that package and make it worthwhile, I stumbled upon the word retainer by itself, and I stumbled upon the context in the legal world. And high-end businesses, they do purchase retainer services from legal firms because they may or may not need these services, but when they need them, they need them now. And it's really crucial to have the availability on site and just really important to have manpower being able to take care of your, you know, application in our case in the first place, which is why The context of WordPress retainers may vary from company to company. Mm-hmm. In most cases, as in ours, it's about providing all the traditional maintenance and uptime and all that jazz, which is kind of the care plans, updates. And then also being able to solve different types of business problems. For most agencies, this means building plugins, new, let's say, landing pages, page templates, whatever it is, or designing anything in addition to the vision. For us, we also try to add additional business help and insights by monetization consulting, marketing consulting, and everything else that our team can provide as an added value and as a benefit and as advice that would help the business and also open opportunities for us to continue providing excellence in the long run.
Okay. Isn't the concept of WordPress retainers or retainers in general more relevant now, as the traditional mindset of just having a website doesn't work for businesses in terms of conversion anymore? Like earlier, I'll just get a website and it will do the magic. But now more and more businesses are realizing just having a website won't help you. It needs to work for you.
Well, kind of yes and no. Small and medium businesses, especially small solopreneurs and freelancers and photographers and the like, they still don't quite realize what it goes into running a digital business. And that's made especially complicated thanks to services such as Squarespace and Wix and Weebly that are letting you build a website by yourself and just picking a theme. You already have the core scheme, you already have default images even, and you just need to fill in the blanks. So that kind of has pros and cons. On one end, everyone can set up a site like this and figure out in a few months, well, nobody's coming to my website, I still need to promote it, I still need to build a competitive advantage, I still need to build email lists and marketing automation and everything else. That's kind of on one end. On the other end, it's making it really easy to just create a side project which is up and running and doesn't really require a lot of maintenance. If people don't realize that this is just a side project and it's not going to really turn it into a lifestyle business, right? So from that perspective, it's kind of some businesses have gone a lot more mature and are a lot more aware that the digital landscape is evolving quickly and lots of effort, time, and attention needs to go into ongoing services in addition to care plans. But for others, it's too tricky. We still get, for every, let's say, 10 requests for proposals we get, 7 or 8 of those proposals are, we need a fixed fee for that entire project, and then pretty much ends there. And 90% of the time, we don't even respond there. Say, well, if that's your mindset for building a complex platform, because I mean, we're talking about, you know, $40,000, $70,000, sometimes even $100,000 project. Mm-hmm. So if you're planning for something like that, and then you don't account for the ongoing maintenance and ongoing development and improvement and growth and yada yada of the platform, then you're doing it wrong. And yeah, I mean, that's obviously a mismatch. But on the other end, lots of companies are now coming to us and saying, well, we see that essentially all you do is retainers. And we are looking for a long-term technical partner that will be around and we can essentially delegate everything technical to you and then just focus on our business, which is exactly the type of audience we're looking for.
Yeah, that was my next question. Like, what are your perfect client fit for WordPress retainers? Now a salon website in a small town operation is an ideal fit for care plan, but not for WordPress retainer. So what type of businesses fit in your in this WordPress retainer service model?
It really depends, but essentially those are the businesses that are making a living thanks to the website one way or another. Okay. That's why about 40% of our clients are high-scale publishers and they serve ads and buy traffic and essentially sell advertisement space on their end and whatnot. Simply because it's a vivid business. If you don't have traffic, you don't make anything. If you don't have ads, you don't make anything. If your ads aren't positioned properly, which is kind of the theory of ad operations by itself, essentially you're losing money. Same goes for e-commerce, same goes for software as a service. Those are the types of businesses that make revenue thanks to their digital platform. So those are kind of our main categories of clients usually. However, we also do have other businesses that already generate decent traffic, don't necessarily sell ad space and don't necessarily, you know, sell any type of goods, but it's really important for their website to be up and running, decent user experience, you know, responsiveness and all the kind of traditional stuff, sometimes progressive web apps, just incorporating more stuff on the marketing landscape, let's say integrations with HubSpot, because we're also a HubSpot agency partner, and we do provide inbound marketing consulting in addition to everything else, integrations with CRMs or with ERPs, other platforms that kind of bundle into the rest of the ecosystem. Or let's say a larger business that has 20 platforms and, you know, the WordPress platform is sitting between, let's say, the CRM or the financial transaction system, and then between the front-facing area that the users see, right? So those kind of combinations, essentially where the website is the leading entry that is making money for a business, those are our ideal clients. And that goes for funded startups as well. For the most part, we don't work with starting startups, but whenever a small business is getting any form of funding and is a fast-paced growing business, they suddenly get featured in, let's say, TechCrunch, in Mashable, in different types of places. They get the funding, they have tons of traffic, and they can present everything that's needed to acquire more and more customers and convert partners and vendors and hire people. So their digital presence becomes more and more important. They already get lots of traffic. They need, let's say, financial calculators, ROI tools online, again, different tools for just monitoring behavior on the website and how customers interact, what to do and for targeting, and again, lots of different stuff going on in the business. But yeah, if I have to kind of sum it up after giving all of those examples, it's customers that may generate revenue straight from the website one way or another, so that our impact, our effort has a direct impact on their business. And us being out of the picture means that they have crashes, websites are down, revenue isn't working fine, some systems are crashing, and delays, slow websites, security issues, lack of the ability to update, and pretty much everything else that you can think of.
Now you mentioned, you know, prospective clients who come with a fixed budget, let's do this project and then we are done with it. We don't want any services from you. Now those clients are like big no in this retainer model. Now, for example, a client comes with a good budget and he is ready for the monthly, you know, retainer stuff. What are a few things you do, or what are the few research steps do you do to perform that vetting of this business client, like if it's like fit for your type of retainer services?
Yeah, sure. So the very first thing is we are validating the business idea and the business model and how is revenue generated right now. Who's in charge of the business?
And is this paid? Like when you're doing this research, is this like paid or like it's the part of the project cost?
So usually this is the first, let's say 30 to 60 minutes in pre-sales. It's really easy to identify that just during the pre-sales call.
Okay.
I mean, again, of course, a lot is going in once we start working with the business. And the first 2 to 6 months are very important to just getting used to the business and the business requirements and the pace of work and everything else. But it usually takes 30 to 60 minutes to just figure out everything you need to know about the business, unless, of course, the client is lying to you. And they don't really have a reason to lie to you unless, again, they're afraid of something. But again, let's assume that customers are legitimate and they are sharing whatever you're asking them and so forth. Because even if they're not, I mean, you're going to work with them for a week or two, something's going to pop up and you're going to stop down and say, hey, look, that's not really what we discussed a couple of weeks ago. That's different. We need to renegotiate right now. Otherwise, you're simply not a good fit for us, right? But aside from that, yeah, we do. What we care about is first, as I said, we want to know that this system is going to make money for the business, and it's important, and they care about it, because otherwise our services are going to be more expensive. We aren't going to be able to provide and suggest innovation that is going to make more money. We aren't going to be able to work closely with them because this is going to be a side project, which is not important. They don't really care about it. There are delays, and essentially it's stressing everyone out, right? So this is kind of the first thing we want to figure out. Second thing is we want to validate the business model. Sometimes it is more or less a fad, and we aren't, like, we don't want to, so I'm going to take it a step back. We don't want to work with, let's say, gambling businesses, those that sell weapons, and, you know, all sorts of contradictory businesses. This is one thing we want to we want to figure out. Because sometimes we stumble upon a legitimate business, and after a 20-minute call, we figure out that they are a legitimate business, but essentially what they do is selling data to other corporations, right?
And there's so many of them. And there's so many of them.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But again, I mean, we simply don't want to do shady stuff knowing that we do shady stuff, right? Sometimes we may be unaware of other businesses working with this business and so forth. I mean, you can't know everything.
Yeah.
But at least as best as we can, we are trying to protect ourselves from these types of scenarios. Then we want to figure out who's going to be the main decision maker and the main point of contact. So we want to make sure that we can properly conduct business with those people. We can come up with ideas on top of our head. We can see how they react. And let's say, I mean, I'm going to give a hypothetical example. Like I'm talking to a business and say, yeah, tell me what you do for a living within the business that is, and how is your website operating? How are you landing customers right now? What are the main challenges you're facing with the website? And that kind of questions. Then when I'm browsing the website, I say, well, I see that your mobile view isn't really friendly. What percentage of your traffic is mobile? And they say, well, I haven't really paid attention. I was like, okay, just open Google Analytics right now, go to this report, you know, audience behavior, whatever it is, mobile, and just tell me what percentage. Say, wow, 60% of my traffic is mobile. And say, well, that's essentially the first step we need to think of. If the majority of your customers are mobile, you need to focus on mobile first experience, right? And then we need to focus on progressive web apps or Google app or anything else that goes in. Then we head in and say, well, how do you measure the interaction of your users? Do you incorporate abandoned cart in some way? Do you have heat maps available to figure out what their user experience works like? Do you have beta testers? And then you can figure out at which stage of the process they are and how they react on first-time suggestions. Because some customers may say, no, this is a stupid idea. We do everything great. We just want you to be, you know, implementing technical stuff. In that case, we're just going to say, well, we are not the right partner for you. I mean, apparently, we do see major problems with this. We definitely need more context and more time. But so far, we do see problems that we deem as a blocker for your digital presence. And we are going to suggest 10 things. And if this is the way you react to that, you're definitely not the right fit for us. So yeah, it's mostly about culture. It's mostly about the viability of the business model. It's mostly about how important the website is to the customer, and also trying to get some assessment on, let's say, revenue and so forth, in order to make sure that our suggested retainer plan isn't going to be a humongous chunk of the revenue of the company.
Curious, are your clients mostly local or they're spread all over?
About 60% in the States, about, let's say, 25% in Europe. We do have 2 or 3 in Israel and some other places around the world, 2 in Canada. I mean, essentially, it's mostly North America, Europe, Israel, and a few other countries.
Okay, now, Care Plans would be one small subset of WordPress retainer services. Now, besides Care Plans within the whole mix of WordPress retainer, what are the other main services that often figure in, like when you're doing WordPress retainers for a big scale project?
So retainers for us, and kind of what I'm trying to teach all my people, and I actually just gave a workshop on return on investment last month internally at the company. So retainers are all about return on investment. And that's something, I mean, essentially when I'm talking to my clients, one of the things I tell them is we are extremely interested in you making a lot more money. Because if we help you generate more revenue and more business opportunities, you are going to be satisfied with our work and are going to keep working with us in the long run. If we fail, you won't really have the incentive to keep working with us for much longer, right? So we're in this with the business. Again, internally, we do have 40 plus people, so we can afford to actually spend even 3 people full time just coming up with ideas for our customers nonstop. So that's definitely an investment. But if we take a look at this in a lower scale, it's all about finding opportunities for generating more revenue for the business or for improving their digital presence, their brand, their PR, or for reducing expenses one way or another. Let's say if a customer is paying 10 grand a month for hosting, what if you can spend, let's say, 30 hours, 50 hours, 100 hours, but once you do some performance optimizations, they start paying 7 grand a month for hosting, or even 5 grand. That's just an example. So if you can save a business $3,000 a month just from moving them to another hosting vendor, or you know, just from improving their code base, you have already paid for yourself one way or another, right? And this is one way that we, like, this is essentially all we think about here internally. All we think about is how's tracking going, conversions rates, you know, performance, user experience, revenue opportunities, different monetization opportunities, how to save time, how to cut costs. And by cutting costs, I'm not talking about, you know, firing people internally. That's, of course, not what we want to do. But just an example, we had a, we spent a couple of years working with a publisher, and kind of one of the first things we did for them is their editorial experience was crap. And they had a couple of editors and about 30 content writers, I think. And the process of kind of, I'm going to simplify it, but their editorial process was so complex that everyone on the team was wasting about a couple hours a week simply because they had to, you know, spend about 30 minutes for some random manual stuff four times a week, right? So we sat down with the manager and I said, look, so you have about 30 people here wasting a couple hours a week because of that. That's about a total of 60 hours a week, or about 240 plus hours a month spent on that insignificant thing. What if we spent 50 hours, build a notifications module, automate this, gather this data from here, build some form of a workflow, and then once we do that, those 240 hours are going to drop down to about 20 to 40 hour stops. So essentially, I'm telling him, you're investing about 50 hours in us, and once we're done, you're going to save 200 hours a month, every single month, thanks to this feature. Right? So that's kind of what makes retainers powerful. We just look for annoying stuff that's wasting time, wasting money, just requiring additional people, additional persona to just manage simple processes, and we look for ways to automate it and then kind of break even and make it a feature that's worthwhile and really worth investing in.
Now, unlike care plans, which are usually fixed price, like most of agencies will offer one or two, three tiers of care plans. Now, I believe you offer custom packages for each client on WordPress Retainer.
So yes, even though the types of services are mostly the same, like we do have the care plans within about 10 hours a month or so, but they're extremely basic compared to everything else that we do. We just, you know, do updates and make sure that the time is in place. And I mean, are essentially just around for stuff that we know. So we do have them within about 10 hours. Then we do have retainers from, let's say, 30 to 50 hours a month. Those are not as common, but starting businesses often, you know, jump on those first until we generate some revenue and convince them that we are worth investing in more. And those services, they still include everything that we do, but we don't spend that much time generating ideas. We don't include more of our tooling that we have internally for all of those customers. So they're kind of the lower tier of retainer plans. And then 50 to about 300 hours a month, which is kind of where most of our retainers are, those packages, they do include all of our effort and attention and reports and just involving multiple people within the project. And in addition to that, we also do include a lot of our tooling that's saving plenty of time for our portion of the care plans as well. So for example, we do have a screenshotting queue that we run before deployments.
Okay.
So we do have a list of pages for a website, you know, the strategic pages, homepage, let's say archive page, the products list page, stuff like that, you know, the most important or the most varying template pages. So we do run our queue, it's creating a screenshot for each of them, for each of the pages. Then we do deploy, run the queue again, it's creating another screenshot, overlapping them and reporting in case there's any discrepancy. So sometimes there is, especially with front-end work, you may update a template, but inevitably it may affect another template as well, simply because the same class is being used, the same ID is being used, whatever it is. And this is really helping us not cause regressions and automate the process for just running this internally. We also do have a custom build stability framework, which I have started about 3 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And we monitor, like we build custom rules for higher end plans and say, for example, this page, assumingly it runs on Instagram embed widget, but we know that Instagram embeds work with integration with Instagram, and Instagram has tokens. Those tokens sometimes may expire. If they expire, the feed is not going to show up anymore.
Yeah.
In addition to just building auto-refreshing tokens whenever we can, in addition to that, we just say, run a check twice a day for this website, for this page, I'm sorry, and look for the DOM elements, which is, let's say, Instagram div with this ID and then iframe with this ID or whatever it is. So it does this check twice a day. In case there is a problem, it sends a message in Slack saying, hey, this website has this problem on this page as reported by this rule. So we build a lot of custom rules that help us catch issues as early as possible, not just simple uptime monitoring, but a very complex feature-driven business problem workflow analysis. And we're incorporating it in our higher-end plans. In addition to that, of course, you do have GT metrics running twice a day, again, reporting in Slack in case the website has slowed down or in case there are other problems that we aren't aware of. This is actually really helpful, mostly because sometimes we do catch the website is loading like 3 times slower and say, wait, what's going on? And then we see that on the homepage, someone has embedded a 4 megabyte image, just an example. And, you know, it isn't intercepting the right feature image size or whatever it is. You know, that's the standard user-driven errors, and we are also taking care of this as well. So it's more about the complete, pretty much everything else that we can incorporate into helping a business with everything. We are trying to do that on the technical and digital landscape.
Okay, coming back to your price points thing. Now you were explaining it on hourly basis. So is it like all your packages are like a person subscribes for like 20 hours per month, 30 hours? Is that how you bill clients?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, you know, there are businesses where you are involved in, you know, long-term goals and business strategy. So while you're doing that, do you have long-term commitment also for WordPress retainers, like prepaying or committing for 1 year, 2 years?
Yeah, we do have discounts for customers that do sign up for 6 months or 1 year ahead. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the pricing also depends on the plans. Like, for example, our standard, very bare-bones retainer fees are $120 per hour. But we also do assume that we may have retainers that are about 30 hours and retainers that aren't really signed up from. And we also assume that we are going to spend a lot of time and effort actually having people on shift, working with our night support and things like that. So it's kind of increasing complexity, it's increasing overhead, it isn't guaranteed and stuff like that. But if a customer comes in and says, well, I'm not going to sign 30 hours, but 100 hours, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to sign a, let's say, 6 months deal upfront, and, you know, general SLA response time that I want is, let's say, 48 hours and not, you know, 8 hours, then we are totally open to discounts and do kind of craft custom deals, which are, again, based on hours, but not really revolving around hours per se. And it's also worth saying that a lot more goes into our pricing as compared to other agencies. So the difference between, let's say, outsourcing to a person or, let's say, leasing someone for half-time or full-time is that for them, you are paying 100% of their time. Even if they're having lunch, even if they're, you know, just browsing Facebook for 20 minutes because they're bored and waiting for a deployment or something like that, you're paying all their time. With us, it's mostly about billable time. We do say, let's say we do estimate for features, we do internal analysis and so forth, and most of that time isn't being paid. We do have, We do have 4 QA people working full-time, and QA time isn't really being billed, which is cutting a lot of the development time that normally would be required to build a feature and then run it through a bunch of QA scenarios and so forth. So essentially, you're only paying for efficiency, and we are taking care of pretty much everything else around.
Now, when compared to selling care plans, how different would be the sales pitch and approach of selling retainers to prospective clients? Now, because in care plan, you know, it's given like you will update and maintain the website. But in WordPress retainers, you are basically, you know, telling the client that we will help you generate more revenue. So is there a, you know, early planning from your end that we will help you generate X amount of revenue, say 6 months down the line? Like, how do you convince a client or, you know, keep the client in your loop in a better manner in terms of financials, because he's investing more money with you upfront?
So with care plans, it's not about, so the problem of care plans, in my opinion, and the reason why we normally don't sell maintenance that much which is what we call care plans,
yeah.
is maintenance for the most part is raised to the bottom. meaning that most, I mean, so the reason I'm saying it, most customers are only comparing a limited set of features, and they have a really hard time figuring out what's the best investment for them. Meaning that they say, okay, I am going to pay for pulling updates, maybe some content updates, maybe, you know, WordPress core updates and the like. And they say, well, this is a feature that everyone is selling, so why should I overpay for that?
Yeah.
And that's actually a valid point. I mean, we only sell maintenance plans if we get a really good deal, a really great brand working with us, and you know they do have those complex enterprise processes and so forth. And we just say, well, if you don't do if you don't do retainer for us, we are going to automatically include a 2-year maintenance plans in the contract and in our proposal. So at least we can stay on top of everything and keep working with the brands and so forth and trying to persuade them to just switch to retainer. But that's essentially the only way it works. And they are only willing to do that simply because we have already done some work with them. They already know us. They already know that we have built the solution. So us building the solution has an added value for them working with us. Otherwise, again, most people say, hey, can't I just, let's say, find a host that is doing this for me and just, you know, expect the hosting to do that? Or can I install the automatic plugin updates?
Yep.
Or can I don't know, go for one of those fixed fee cheap services that cost like $60 a month and then they have unlimited task support or something like that? Because I know at least 3 of these, right? So that's why care plans are more about, it's trickier to work with care plans because you need to know the customer, or you need to have built the website for the customer to have additional value to offer compared to everyone else. With retainers, it's a bit different. You're paying a lot more, definitely. I mean, you're paying 4 to 5 figures a month.
Yeah.
So it's a different game. But then you do have the added benefit and the added perks of having credibility, having more people, having more resources. I mean, even if it's not more people, I mean, when we started doing retainers, we were like 8 people or something like that. And out of those 8 people, 2 were kind of admin-ish type of tasks, right? So it's not necessarily about the more people. It's about the type of service, the availability, having maintenance and support and availability and the ability to also build custom features as needed. Because for our customers, they know that they need to pay for the care plans, right? They know that updates are needed, yada, yada, yada. But they all say, well, marketing calls us. We have a major marketing campaign in 2 weeks. We are launching a new feature, a new product. There is a press release coming in. Within those 2 weeks, we need to work on creative. We need to work on landing pages. We need to work on marketing funnels. We need to work on thank you emails. Everything needs to go to our CRM. We need GDPR compliance, this and that, and this and that, and this and that. So they need to know that, you know, within just a few days, we can react with all that, build the required extensions, kind of bridges between different plugins, that we call them proxies, build the landing pages, make them, you know, mobile friendly, connect them to the marketing automation toolkit, test pretty much everything, and are able to react. In addition to just having other general features, such as, let's say, convert those static templates to Gutenberg, for example, right? So this is something that helps them build more templates manually afterwards without having to pay for each template being coded out of the box.
Yeah.
And so on and so on. So this is kind of what makes retainers, they are harder to sell because your audience is, you get a smaller pool of companies that are capable of paying retainers in the first place. But at the same time, it's all about positioning and value and branding and opportunities. So okay. Just going back to the very original question, we don't promise any revenue opportunities and so forth. But when we are doing the initial analysis and so forth, we just tell them, look, this is losing money. This is losing money. This is losing money. You're wasting time here. That's what we can do. That's what we can implement. That's what we can do. We can do this, 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 this. We can't guarantee any form of revenue improvements because it depends on lots of different factors. But as you can see, this is going to improve user experience and this and that and this and that, and going to help you convert more as a result.
Okay. A agency owner who is currently offering care plans and listening to you now, what 3 things would you recommend to allow the expansion of care plans horizon into full-blown retainer concept?
What 3 things? So the first thing is focus on return on investment. That's really what customers want to listen about. let's assume automotive manufacturers. You have the Volkswagens, then you have the Bentleys and Maseratis and Ferraris and so forth. Some of them are for the general population. They want to sell quantity and not quality. And the others one are boutique and they can do whatever they want because they have the brand. So ROI is important. You're either raised to the bottom with generic plans or are providing excellence one way or another. So that's ROI is definitely the first thing to do. Second thing is think about how to provide ROI based on your specific skills. Now, we do that with business and marketing expertise most of the time because I'm featured in Forbes, HuffPost, Inc., and a bunch of other different places and I'll have lots of contacts, and this is something that I can help them with because I also do advisory for clients. But for some, this may be user experience or even someone with education in psychology or sociology or even anthropology may actually help with user experience advice and behavioral testing and just organizing user studies, small beta groups to actually work on the site. Could be design, could be SEO, could be this, could be that. So just find something that kind of distinguishes your care plans with a little bit and provides a little bit more kind of value. Okay. And third thing is always try to find ways to kind of increase the value of your existing plans with limited costs on your end. So, for example, if you can do SEO analysis and you don't have, for example, SEO experts on your end, consider, for example, purchasing, let's say, Ahrefs, which costs, about $400 a month or so, and running analysis for your customers. I mean, it all depends on how many clients you have, how much you're charging, and so forth. But sometimes, if you have to pay $400 a month for a very powerful tool and a powerful plan and so forth, and you have 40 clients, this means you're only paying $10 extra per client for a very detailed SEO report for them and so forth. If you can charge them $50 extra for the opportunity to bundle this report in, you essentially make $40 extra for every single client. So yeah, just consider expanding your plans based on the scale that you already have, based on the customers you already have, and kind of providing that extra value at a little bit of the extra cost, but still making a margin on top of it.
Okay, now this is a very quick classic question. How do I get clients like for website development for someone who isn't into care plans? Now this retainer plan is altogether a different ballgame in terms of pricing and estimate. So how do you get your retainer clients on a regular basis? Like do you do cold email outreach or do you, throw out your services on certain conferences? What is your methodology?
I can share ours, but I really don't think that it matters quite a lot. It's a very complex matter, and I've spoken about this in blog posts, in other podcasts, interviews, and so forth. But in order to sum it up, again, it really depends on whether you're doing something at scale or whether you're doing something as a boutique service.
Okay.
We do work more on the boutique end, right? I mean, there are developers charging $10 to $20 per hour. We do charge $120. And we do that at scale with monthly plans and so forth. So this is one thing that's really worth noting. But in our case, it's more about really providing that extra value. Again, like I said, we do have 8 core contributors in-house. We do have people who actually build the WordPress core. We do invest a lot of money in relationship building, in partnerships, in just working with other high-scale businesses, working with enterprises. We do go to events, but not really WordCamps, just meeting other WordPress developers, which is, it's always fun if you have the time, but it's not really business generating. But we actually go and do strategic meetings with creative directors and branding directors and so forth that we actually meet on site. We do try to kind of jump into different clubs that are gathering more successful entrepreneurs, and by successful, I mean revenue only. I'm not necessarily saying that they have great businesses and so on. So this is kind of what we do. And again, our inbound marketing is definitely something that we've spent 6 figures in terms of content and attention. Mm-hmm. And we do rank on page one for WordPress development agency, WordPress development retainers, and lots of kind of keywords that also bring customers to us. So sometimes it's referrals, it's my own brand, it's inbound marketing, it's networking at the right places and so forth. But this for us, If you, there are different ways to make it work. You can only offer retainers in a specific vertical. In that case, you have a competitive advantage because you are very experienced in a specific vertical. For example, if you work with legal firms, you know what legal customers need, what legal users are looking for in a website, what are the software applications that all legal firms incorporate, what are the legal requirements that everyone does, and so forth. If you work with medical companies, because we've worked with both and we kind of know some specifics. With medical companies, you know that some products cannot be sold in certain countries.
Yeah.
So you know that you can always offer a solution to just pick the type of country where a specific product resides and then, you know, just sell it there and then have the UI to actually manage that behind the scenes. And then have, you know, other compliance things that medical offices have to offer to their customers. You know, so niches, sometimes it's a great way to do that. Horizontally, for a specific type of product, that's also a great way to do that. Let's say body press retainers, right? You're only focused on body press. And if you have a business looking for body press and ongoing services, you can brand yourself out for all things body press, and you're going to be kind of the go-to small agency for body press services. So, yeah, I mean, there's also the opportunity to just do retainers in a different form. Like, let's say, leasing someone at, let's say, $20 per hour half time and getting, you know, an hour a week with the founder of the company, which is doing the extra consulting. Or you can do leasing people and then offering additional services. Or you can do your small team and then outsourcing to other partner agencies, right? It's all about just being creative and just looking for revenue opportunities and just generating additional opportunities. That's it for your prospective customers.
Okay, cool. Now let's shift our gears and talk about your toolbox. So what are your current five favorite tools that power your online business?
Gmail. I mean, are we talking only WordPress or actually?
No, it depends on your business setup. Like, which are your five critical tools that are important in your business running day to day?
Gmail is definitely the one go-to tool that I'm going to pick, simply because it's, my email is where I live in most of the time. Leads come in there, interviews, pretty much everything else. So, I mean, even if it's not quite a tool, but it's super important. Slack is kind of the other tool because we manage our team internally with Slack. It's super important and all that jazz. We do have Asana, which is our project management system. And again, pretty much everything else goes in there, including my PR team, including my all of my content work internally, including my in-house kind of dev and PM system. I mean, essentially everything goes into Asana one way or another. So those are kind of the top three tools. I'm going to mention WordPress simply because it's easy. Obviously, most of the tools, our time tracking system is based on WordPress. Our CRM is based on WordPress. Our wiki is based on WordPress. Like, pretty much everything that we do internally for the team is based on WordPress. So one way or another, it's a tool. And what else? What am I paying for? And yeah, I mean, Zoom actually. Zoom is probably my fifth most favorite tool because I can schedule video calls pretty easily. Works great on mobile. Yeah. It has video recording. You can call from everywhere around the world. You don't have the lag that you got just doing international offshore calls for customers. So yeah, I guess those five things are really helping me thrive over the past at least three to four years.
Which is your recommended web hosting service? Like, do you use certain specific hosting for your clients or recommend certain hosting to clients who do not want to host with you, but they want to host themselves?
Yeah, so our kind of preferred hosting partner is Pagely. We have been working with Pagely for more than a couple years now. They are a bit more expensive though, like their VPS one starts at about $500 a month or so. But for the most part, it actually is cheaper for us. And we've actually had customers, I mean, DaoP Engine is a pretty cheap, I mean, it starts at $30 per hour, but we have moved several customers to Pagely and they automatically start paying, let's say, 20% less or so. So at a higher scale, as you grow further, other hosting companies may become more inefficient as compared to Pagely, even though Pagely is a lot more expensive at first, unless your business can, you know, actually afford that. So Pagely is definitely our kind of go-to host. I have worked with SiteGround, and their office is actually pretty close to ours. They're pretty good for, you know, just standard WordPress stuff, especially if you're a small business portfolio, freelancer agency, pretty good for that. And we also do a lot of stuff with DigitalOcean or AWS directly.
Okay. And do you use any page builder for website development, like Beaver, Thrive, Elementor? You got any favorite ones, or you hate page builders?
I pretty much hate most of them. Elementor, I'm more or less tolerant to. Beaver Builder is interesting. We never got used to just the concept of front-end editing in the first place, as you can see in kind of other systems. So Beaver Builder, it's, we kind of have a, like a...
soft spot?
It's more about we neither hate it nor love it. It's just there. We realize it's there. We can neither recommend it nor really hate
and
it.
And what about Gutenberg? Some people call it as a page builder, which it's actually true, but hey, it's a mini page builder.
Gutenberg, I really hated the idea at first in general as a priority for WordPress core, but I do like the upcoming phases, the ability to build widgets with Gutenberg, menu items and so forth. It's still slow. It's still causing problems. Editing is still inconsistent. Accessibility issues. It's far from ready. It probably will be pretty helpful in a couple of years from now. But so far, it's good. And we already do build blocks for some of our customers. And it's pretty fun. So Gutenberg is, I assume, going to be the future of the editing experience, probably with other builders building on top of Gutenberg as a result.
Yeah, probably end of the year when it matures. But as of now, it's a naughty baby, which is difficult to tame sometimes with updates, things breaking here and there. Okay.
Exactly. So,
which is your recommended email marketing service if you use one? I'm sure you use something.
So from a branding standpoint, I really like MailChimp. It's just something that I just like the brand. That's all. And sometimes you don't need the best features. You just need the brand and user experience. So I like them. For customers, we do use a bunch of others, Aweber, GetResponse, and I do like ConvertKit lately. It's really growing as a standalone tool. That's really powerful. And maybe one day I'm going to convert to ConvertKit.
Yeah, there's so many options these days for even a simple thing like email marketing. You can go for simple like MailChimp to mammoth like ActiveCampaign. Like they have all kinds of features that can confuse you, but also can be productive if you know how to use it.
Or Infusionsoft or the mailing of HubSpot, which is extremely like you have like two rocket scientists just dealing with that.
Okay, lastly, any upcoming tool or service that has caught your eye attention recently?
Upcoming tour series that's coming soon. I did see the code sniffer testing for the team unit test just like an hour ago, which was something pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I do see some Docker container environments such as, you know, the VVV that we got right now or Flywheels too, that they do have like Flywheel local. I do see some upcoming ones from different vendors, but I'm very much looking for a more consistent local development environment being introduced one way or another through Dalpy CLI or somehow integrated WordPress core or just some of the existing ones maturing in a way that's easier to actually share the environments with other people and not having a web server running at all times right now.
Yeah, because do you use local by Flywheel?
I don't. I do use VVV, which is something that's really sweet, but it doesn't run on all environments. Some of my colleagues, it doesn't work. It doesn't play well on their machine, so I have to kind of comply with different environments pretty much.
Yeah, local setup is always a pain. Like when you're doing it on your own machine, it's fine. But when you are sharing with someone else, that is where the problem starts to happen.
That's what I've experienced as well. Yeah, just someone sharing a snapshot and I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, there's a business opportunity for someone who's listening.
Indeed.
Okay, Mario, it was amazing talking to you. I'm sure even you liked it, enjoyed it. And
yeah, pretty fun. Thanks for having me again.
Have a good day.
You too. Likewise. Cheers.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.